You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Conference 97, first day, 4 p.m.
Okay, what we're going to talk about now is a precursor to everything else that's going to follow this week. If you don't understand the subject of the next hour and a half to 2 hours before we break to eat supper, then you're not going to really understand anything else that follows. And I know that most of you don't need this, but it's an absolute requirement that we talk about it. We've got to. And that's freedom. There are so many people in this world who talk about freedom, they haven't got the slightest concept of what they're talking about. For instance, I can ask anybody in any high school graduating class, in any high school in the nation, to define freedom for me. And I'll get some weird off-the-wall statement, well, it means freedom of speech. Well, what does that mean? Well, it means I can say anything I want. Does it? Does it really? What is freedom and what does it really mean? And why should we be so concerned about the meaning of that word? So that's going to be the subject for the next hour and a half to 2 hours. And I'm going to need some participation, some help from you. Because this is really important that you grasp the concept and the true meaning of the word freedom. Let's sort of go around the room. And folks, I'm not doing this to embarrass you. And there really isn't a right answer, as you're going to find out. Because the definition or the meaning of freedom is subjective. When we talk about society as a whole, it has an objective meaning, a real, definite meaning, if you want to have a society that lives in peace with each other. But depending on who you are and where you're coming from, and what your particular moral code is, or lack of moral code, or your system of ethics, if you will, your definition of freedom is going to be subjective. It's going to be based upon what you particularly have been taught to believe in your life. So I want to go around the room real quick, and I want everybody to give me just a quick, simple definition of freedom. Don't be embarrassed. I'm not going to use you an example or embarrass you or anything. I just want to get an idea, and I want you all to get an idea of the different concepts of the different people in this room, which represents probably a segment of the very best of the population that really wants to have a good future and live in freedom. Even amongst this group, you can find that there's going to be some different answers. Pat, you want to start off?
Well, I think you'd be able to, but I wanted to, without having to worry about, like, the license.
To do what you want to do, without having to worry about somebody putting restrictions on you.
Yeah, you know, being a responsible person.
With responsibility.
Yeah,
without infringing on other people. Okay, Jean?
Same as her. I would just say a little bit of
choice. Choice. Okay. Principally the same as Pat, but you that choice.
Freedom is an extension of the word liberty.
Freedom is an extension of the word liberty. Now, this is interesting, because then to understand what he said, we have to define liberty. And if we don't, we really don't know what he said, do we? Next.
It's the, it'll be the same thing they said, as long as it doesn't harm my neighbor's
I will go around and go do what I want to do, be around and do, feel what I want to feel. And as long as it harms no one else, I should be free to do that.
Okay, so you think freedom is to be able to do whatever you want to do as long as it doesn't harm anybody else. Okay. I got to repeat that because the camera can't hear and the other people back there can't hear. Who's next? Real quick.
Freedom is a universal right for everyone to grow, develop as they choose.
Universal right for everyone to grow and develop as they choose. Next.
I think freedom is like, I have the ability to do what I want to do in my home, and they can raise their kids and do what they want to do in their way, and it's not really needed to try to do it, you know, watch them, et cetera.
So freedom to you means mind your own business, don't judge other people. He can do what he wants in his home, you can do what you want in yours. Next.
Freedom to do what you want to do without harming other people or other people's property.
Freedom is being able to do what you want to do without harming other people's person or property. Is that correct?
Right.
Next. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you. Make your own decisions, okay? Next.
Agreeing with her, participating in making my own decisions, and participating in other people making decisions.
So you want to be able to make your own decisions, and but participate in decisions that other people make that might affect you. Okay. Patty? Freedom of choice. Okay. Jay?
Well, it would be somewhere between slavery and license.
Between slavery and license?
Yeah, it would be.
And you did something similar to what he did. Now we have to define slavery and license before we really understand what he said. And if we don't.
It would be total control.
Pardon? Slavery is total control?
License would be total freedom without moral or ethical concern at all.
Okay, no restrictions whatsoever. No concerns even. Next.
I think it's being able to believe or read what you want, to own property, to keep profit from my work, freedom to do or not do things as long as you don't hurt the person or property of anyone else.
Okay. Do what you want to do, make the profit you want to make, engage in the occupation you want to engage in, read what you want to read, as long as you don't hurt the person or property of anybody else. Next. I didn't really hear all that you said. You have to do what you want to do without all kinds of rules and stuff, right? Sure. Next.
I think freedom is the absence of control placed upon the majority by a minority.
The absence of controls placed upon the majority by a minority.
Majority and minority.
Yeah. I think that's what I did. I say that right? Did I say what he said, guys? Okay. Up front. Hello?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Truth is essential to freedom.
Truth is essential to freedom? Okay.
Freedom, in a nutshell, is the responsibility and allowing persons the ability to make their own decisions and to allow them. I have the word all set out here to do the. See, I lost this. Darn it.
Well, that's okay. Can you sort of say in a nutshell without?
Well, it's allowing someone else to have an opinion, and allowing them to express their opinion, and allowing them the freedom to say what they need to say, and you the freedom to do what you have to say. Because without being able to express your opinion, you have no freedom.
Okay. Thank you. Next.
Again, to be able to live where I want to live, participate in the type of activities or income-earning situation that I choose to pursue, as long as it doesn't infringe upon the rights of anyone else.
Okay. Next. Make all kinds of choices that you choose to make. Rich?
Great freedom is faith in the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and property granted to us by the Creator. I believe that we have those rights have to be protected, and as long as they are protected using our system of the constitutional Republican type system of constitutional laws, as long as we don't hurt the property, the life or property of another, that's what we aspire to be as Christians.
Okay, so basically what you're saying is that freedom to you is based upon the unalienable right to life, liberty, and property under the constitutional law that governs this country. Okay, next?
The opportunity to live as you want,
believe as you want, and live without fear. And nobody else said that, did they? Next.
Mine is to be able to do your thing as long as you don't hurt anybody's property or person.
Do your own thing as long as you don't hurt anybody's person or property. Next.
I believe that freedom is a way of life whereby I am able to choose to deal with others if I have a need, and also that
well, I can hear you say the Decalogue, right? Yeah, that's the Decalogue. Do I know that you would have them doing you? Is that what you believe?
Sure.
Next?
I believe the ability to choose a responsible way of life and to allow others to do the same without impeding or oppressing them.
Choose a responsible way of life without impeding on others, allow them to do the same. Irene?
I have a belief to come in and issue that I think that you said that the responsibility and the attitude as long as you of the
responsibility and ability to do whatever you wish as long as it doesn't infringe upon anybody else's right to do the same thing. John?
Respect,
okay. John?
Right to defend myself.
Right to defend yourself, okay. Next.
Limited government without fear, the right of property and political happiness, political responsibility.
Limited government without fear and the right of property, and what else did you say?
And liberty with responsibility.
And liberty with responsibility. Next.
Freedom is our being allowed to live and have our certain rights, most of which are, I guess, a lot of us spelled out in the Constitution, ability to go out and engage in the pursuit of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. But then again, it can't work without the rule of law.
In pursuit of your rights, as spelled out in the Constitution, and live by the golden rule. Next.
Could be a state of mind, body, or spirit in which you recognize that God has given you rights, which man cannot give you, and living to protect those rights for yourself and for others.
State of mind, body, or spirit, realizing that God gave you certain rights that you also gave others, that you have to respect this mutually. Is that correct? Did I paraphrase what you said correctly? I don't want to say, I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth. Respect the rights of others. Okay. If I get it wrong, correct me, because I want to make sure I say what you wanted to say. Next.
Right to pursue your dream.
Okay. Next.
The right to do what you want to do and not hassle others and not get hassled by
others. Okay, do what you want to do, not get hassled, and not hassle. That's pretty simple, huh? Next.
That's the
So it's a state of mind, but you believe that the Constitution and the Bill of Rights define the limitations and the rights that you believe if they were applied the way that they were written would represent freedom to you. They didn't help mine too, I gotta tell you.
Cal? I believe freedom is like a gift from the Creator, and only through man does that gift infringed upon, taken away, regulated, where freedom is the ultimate gift from the Almighty, so that you can make responsible choices without hurting anyone else.
Okay, I think you said that pretty good, and I think that got on camera. Denise?
Ditto.
Ditto. Is this the rush room? Do whatever you want as long as it doesn't interfere with anybody else. Okay, all the way in the back. Larry? Freedom. What's freedom to you? There's no right or wrong answer. Just live and let live. Okay, that's good. Travel wherever you want in pursuit of happiness. Bruce? God-given rights is what? Okay. Responsible exercise of God-given rights without infringing on anybody else's rights or their property. Okay. Diane, homecoming queen. This is a private joke between Diane and I. Diane and I are great friends that go back quite a ways, and she's helped us out an awful lot. So if you don't understand, leave it be. Yes, ma'am.
Well, among other things, I think it's the right to succeed or fail, even if your standard of success or failure is not the same standard as everyone else.
To succeed or fail, even if your standard is not the same standard as everyone else's. Okay. Good. Dennis?
The right to homeschool or to start to see fit, and the right to live and breathe without asking anyone's.
Homeschool your two sons the way you see fit, live and breathe without asking anyone's approval. Letha? Don't you dare say ditto.
I love what Cal said. It seems to me that God is here to live our life, and people restrict us. We're not able to do what we're made of, what we're here for.
Okay, so you basically agree with what Cal said. God made you live your life, and if people restrict you, you can't live up to your expectations or potential, right? Next. You guys want to get in this? Nolan?
Sure.
Bob?
Okay.
Good. What basically what he said is don't encroach upon other people and their property, and do everything that you have promised to do. And it'd be a much better world if people just did that one thing.
Don't do it. You can always just hold things for trouble.
Yeah. Who's next?
Do you have a the ability to believe what you wish to believe, to be who you wish to be, so long as you do not infringe upon those same rights?
Believe what you want to believe, be what you want to be, as long as you don't infringe upon those same rights as other people. Yes? I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Basically, what you're saying is do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Is that correct? Okay. Next?
I think the freedom is a God-given right that no man or men should try to take away from anyone.
God-given right that no man or anybody else can take away from anyone. Gentlemen? Have two representatives here from XL who I invited to come and see what we do. They'll be here for a couple hours, I think. This is Nolan Udall, who's a neighbor of mine and a good friend. What's your definition of freedom, Nolan?
To me, freedom is the ability and the right to be able to dream and then to speak without people agreeing, without interference from others, within parameters set around the protocols, and to be able to accomplish what I want and to help others.
To be able to dream, accomplish those dreams, and without and help other people without stepping on anybody along the way. Is that basically?
Right. I just want to be saved from the good guys.
You want to be what?
Saved from the good guys.
Saved from the good guys.
I don't have that freedom to be what I want to be and do
like. Saved from the good guys, have the freedom to be what he wants to be and do what he wants to do. That's a I've never heard that before. Be saved from the good guys. But isn't that... Yeah. But isn't that what they really believe about themselves? They believe they're doing what's best for all humanity, even if they're doing bad. And they rationalize their actions. The end justifies the means. We got to make a better world by killing everybody in this barn today. It's okay to do it. So, you know, basically what he said is right on the money. Saved from the good guys. Carl, where are you? Carl, what's your definition of freedom?
I think basically what everybody else is.
Carl, you know better. You can't cop out at my seminar. Stand up and tell me what you really think freedom is.
Freedom is everything to me.
Okay. Wonderful. Okay. Carl, freedom is everything to him, as long as he's not encroaching on anybody else. Yes, sir?
I freedom is a gift you give to others.
Freedom is a gift you give to others. That's very good. Okay, now, the point I wanted to make by this is not pinpoint anybody and say, you're wrong and you're right. What I wanted to, for everybody to see, is even in this group, that's a pretty sophisticated group when you're talking about freedom, there's some pretty different answers in this room, isn't there? Yes, sir.
No responsibility. If you have no responsibility, you're in an institution, and you have no freedom. With no freedom, you're in an institution, and no liberty. On the other side, if you have total responsibility, then you have total freedom. So responsibility goes with freedom.
Okay. Now let's explore this from a real world point of view. Let's look at freedom. And let's look at it every way we possibly can, because I think by applying it to the real world, we can pretty much come to a real definition of freedom that everybody in this room can agree upon. Now the reason that this has to be done is you look out across this country, you read this newspaper, as compared to this newspaper over here. You listen to Ted Koppel, Dan Rather. You listen to a Sunday morning evangelist. You listen to somebody who's a spokesperson for some group that calls itself a militia. You listen to another group that says they're the constitutional rights activists of America. You listen to the Greenpeace people, and what you find is they're all trying to practice a form of freedom that only they understand. Okay? So unless we all agree upon a definition of freedom, and we find out what that is by applying it to the real world, then we really can't talk about freedom. And when we say, you know, they're encroaching upon our freedom, who are we talking about? The Greenpeace people? The Christians? The Mormon Church? The Catholic Church? The Baptists? Are we talking about the atheists? I mean, what are we talking about when we say they're encroaching on our freedom? And who is they? Okay, if we can start with one premise, we have to have a premise before we start, that the Founding Fathers came to this country to escape religious persecution in the old world. Would everybody agree with on that? Is that pretty much a true statement? And part of the great battle of building this country was people striving for religious freedom? The Founding Fathers came from the old world to this country to escape religious persecution and then set up religious persecution of their own in the colonies?
Correct.
Right? And then people striving for their own religious religious freedom were persecuted by the people who came here to escape from religious persecution? And isn't it still going on today? What happened to the Branch Davidians? Did they have freedom?
Yeah.
Why were they so vilified? Because they practiced a religion that was strange to everybody else. So freedom has its roots basically connected to religion, doesn't it? Or, if you want to put it another way, escape from some religions. Okay, at least in the beginning. You see, in the beginning, freedom was a concept that was strange to the world. Strange to the world. And we find that all through the history of the world, no matter which civilization you're talking about, you'll find books that say that the Roman civilization or the Roman society was a democracy where everyone was free. Is that true? And you can accept that or reject it, but when you actually examine the history of the Roman Empire, you find that there was an elite group of people known as the original citizens of the city of Rome, who were the only ones who were free and could participate in government. And if you didn't belong to that particular group of people, no matter where you lived in the Roman Empire, you weren't really free, were you? Were those people really free? Even the elite who belonged to that select group that were the original citizens who set up the empire, the families, were they really free? Did the government of Rome recognize unalienable rights endowed upon individuals by their creator? No. So freedom was something that was granted by the state, could be taken away by the state. It was a capricious will of the Senate that said whether you were free or not and how free you were. Is that correct?
Right.
In the Greek civilization, were the people free? No. Not on your life. Throughout the history of the world, folks, if you really study the history, and you don't get caught up in all of these idealistic, philosophical questions, but look at the reality of the time, you'll see that no people on the face of this earth ever were free until this country was founded. And what was the premise that made people free in this country that had never existed before in the history of the world? What is it? Just something has to go before that. There is a God. Without God, there are no unalienable creator endowed rights. So if you reject God, already you've rejected freedom. Because if God says you have unalienable rights, if God is the ultimate authority in the universe, who can take those rights away from you?
No one.
No one. Period. No one. That's the premise upon which this nation was founded. One, there's a God. Whether you believe in God or not, it doesn't make any difference. Our founding fathers said, for this to work, there must be a higher law that man must answer to. Otherwise, liberty and freedom is at the capricious will of whoever rules, whoever's in office. Therefore, there is a God. Without that, there is nothing else. I said it on my I said it on my radio show a million times. How many of you heard me say this before? Whether you believe in God or not, you better start if you want to be free. How many of you heard me say that? How many times? About half a million? That's the truth, isn't it? You see, man, if he doesn't have to answer to a higher authority, is subjective in everything that he does, isn't it? Where does moral law come from? It comes from God. Without God, there can be no moral law. Everything else is subjective. Now, you know me, I'm a strict constitutionalist. I believe that you have the right to believe in whatever you want to believe. And I'll fight for your right to do that. I'll even die for your right to do that. Even if you believe in Satan. Or if you believe in nothing. Or if you believe that you got to chop down 6 trees a day to worship your God. I'll fight and die for your right to do that. And I'll do it the first moment that I'm called upon to do it. Without hesitation. Because I know that I have to do that in order for me to be free. Now that's a strange concept, isn't it? I can't be free unless I'm willing to die for your right to be something that I might hate. How many people really understand that concept? How many people out there in the world do you think really understand that concept? Not too many. But that's exactly what this country was founded upon. The founding fathers knew that they had to create a nation that recognized unalienable rights granted to each individual by his or her creator. Only by doing that, they took the capricious will away from the man leaders and said, hey, you can't touch this area because you haven't got the authority to do so. They established a limited government with limited powers. They did not establish a democracy. They established a constitutional republic. Part of the effort to destroy this country is to convince you that it's a democracy. Why do you think they want you to believe that this is a democracy if it's not? Why is that so important to these people? Rich.
For the government, you could end up with a man-made government. You don't need the unalienable rights if you could depend on...
You don't need God. You don't need unalienable rights. All you need is a majority vote, right?
The mob.
Yeah. Now, V.I. Lenin, the founder of the Soviet Union, said, democracy is indispensable to socialism because they know that the majority will always ultimately vote themselves everything. Everything. Which ultimately becomes communism. Okay? So one of the first steps of destroying freedom is to destroy a constitutional republic by convincing you that it's really a democracy. And then once you're convinced of that, you will make it happen. And you will slide into socialism and ultimately into enslavement under communism. And that's what's happening in this country today. So freedom, basically, based upon the reality of the history of the world, depends upon whether or not you believe in God. If you believe in God, you believe that God gave man unalienable rights. What's unalienable mean? It comes from the root word lien. Cannot be leaned against. Now, you hear people say all the time, inalienable. What does inalienable mean? It means it can be leaned. See, they're trying to fool you. Where is the definition spelled out? Where is the precedent set for which word you use? The Declaration of Independence. Read the Declaration of Independence. That is the first document at law in this country. The very first. As a nation. There are documents that have effect that go back farther. But the first document at law in this country is the Declaration of Independence, which says that man was endowed by his Creator with unalienable rights. Is that correct? So how come every time you see somebody on television or somewhere else, they're talking about inalienable rights? Because if they convince you that that's true and you use the word inalienable, what you're saying is your rights can be leaned against and taken away. The Greek word is unalienable. Cannot be leaned against. Cannot be taken away. No one has the authority to do it. So by the clever use of words, they trick you into giving up your freedom. First, there must be a God. Second, God must have granted man certain unalienable rights which can never be taken away. And third, the constitutional republic is set up to protect, recognize and protect those rights. Those rights define freedom, limit government, and define freedom. And basically, what they set up was a place where people could live and do and flourish and reach the ultimate of their capabilities as long as they didn't hurt the person or property of any other human being. Now, it was flawed in the beginning, because here was the nation that first set man free in the entire history of the world and said, there's a God, and God gave man unalienable rights, and at the same time turned around and said, this man's my slave. But it's that same document that allowed those slaves to ultimately be set free and granted the same privileges and rights, because there are some privileges connected with this, as every other person or every other living human. You have to be careful with that word person, though. Okay? Would everybody agree with what I just said? Okay. So, there was a lot of different definitions here, and there were some that connected freedom to the Creator, and some that did not, and some that went this way, and some that went that way. Basically, every one of you got it right in some aspect. But you've got to understand this. Even though the Founding Fathers said there is a God who's endowed upon man certain unalienable rights which can never be taken away, and created a constitution and a bill of rights that recognized that fact and protected those rights, what is your ultimate freedom or imprisonment or enslavement depend upon?
Your will. The upholding of those rights.
Who said the will to defend it? Because that's the right answer. The will, and more than the will, the resolve to defend it. Because governments change. Bureaucrats come and go. Men are elected and leave office all the time, don't they? And what is the ultimate character of the government? It's the character of the men who occupy the offices within that government. That's why in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, you will not see any reference to God anywhere or Jesus Christ or any other religious entity of any church whatsoever, because they set the government up to recognize one thing only. There's a God, and God endowed man with unalienable rights. This Constitution recognizes those rights and protects them and limits government. Even though God is not mentioned in there, it is implied through the writings and the actions and the intent of the framers of the Constitution. But they were very careful to establish a secular government, which, because of the religion of the early enforcers of this government, occupiers of government office, bureaucrats, presidents, vice presidents, senators, representatives, the government reflected the morals and the ethics of the Christian community. But was the government itself Christian? No. The government never went to church, did it? The government didn't say prayers, did it? But the men who occupied the offices did. Now, if you understand that fact, you might understand now why things are changing. Are the people who occupy the offices of the government now Christian?
No.
Are they, for the most part, Mormon?
No.
Are they Buddhist?
No.
What are they?
Secular humans.
Secular humans. They're atheists, aren't they? So the reason you're seeing the government and the application of government taking the changes and doing the things that it is doing is because government always reflects the morals or lack thereof and the ethics and the beliefs and the attitudes of the men and women who occupy the offices of government. If these people have no moral code and no ethical code, they have no restraints, everything becomes subjective. Doesn't it? Subjective is dangerous. Because in my subjective viewpoint, you might be expendable, and I really don't care what you think about it. I'm in charge. And I don't care what that 200-year-old document that those old doddering old men wrote who didn't understand the modern complexities of the new age wrote. You're out of here, bud. Call him off and chop his head off. That's what happened. So folks, when we talk about freedom, these are the elementary things that we have to understand. Freedom did not exist for the common man in this world ever in the history of the world until this nation was created. And the only reason common man became free is because the founding fathers said, there's a God. That God endowed upon man certain unalienable rights that no one can take away. And we have set up a government and a constitution and a bill of rights that recognize this and protect those rights and limit the power of government so that our posterity may enjoy this freedom. What's the difference? Well, let me ask you this. Is liberty freedom?
No.
Why? People are always talking about liberty when they should be talking about freedom.
Freedom is too much. And restrictions is too much. Liberty is somewhere in between.
Is that correct?
Liberty is within guidelines.
When I was in the Navy, I had to stay on board the ship unless the captain granted liberty.
Liberty's granted by man.
Privilege to go.
Liberty is a privilege granted by whoever's in charge. So when you're talking about freedom, don't get it mixed up with liberty. Liberty is good. We should give people as much liberty as we possibly can. If they can handle that liberty and they're not going to hurt anybody else by giving them some more other than what they have as the freedom that they've been granted by their Creator and respected and honored and protected by the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, why can't we give them some liberty? We can, can't we?
Sure.
Sure we can. And that's good. But it is not the same as freedom, is it? See, I was free before I joined the Navy. When I joined the Navy, I got liberty. Okay? Does everybody understand the difference? And you don't really begin to appreciate that until you're in something like the Navy. And if you're a low man on the totem pole, you still may not appreciate it. I didn't really appreciate it until I was made a patrol boat captain in Vietnam and given a crew and given this patrol boat that cost probably $1 million and all these weapons that I could have destroyed any place I wanted to with, and I was responsible for these men. Then I understood why there had to be liberty instead of freedom on that boat. Because if I gave those guys freedom instead of liberty, I might have been on patrol by myself. And things might not have worked. See, in his freedom, the gunners may have decided not to clean the guns. But in my saying, you can't have liberty until the guns are cleaned, I made sure that it got done. So liberty is sort of a judicious responsibility if you're not a despot. If you're a despot, you can turn liberty into something horrible, can't you? Something promised and never granted. Who saw Mr. Roberts? I'm glad when I was in the Navy, I wasn't on that ship. Because those guys didn't have any freedom, and they never had any liberty. And the only time they ever had any liberty, all hell broke loose. It was sort of a lesson in what can happen if you restrict a population too much. When they finally went on the beach, what did they do? They tore the hell out of everything. And let Mr. Roberts hold them back. Because he was the good guy, always sticking up for them, right? Okay, have we sort of clarified that word, freedom? Does anybody in here have any questions? Because if you do, if you think I'm wrong, if you want to explore this a little more, we can do that. Yes, sir.
I don't know if I can add your scripture to this or not, but there's a concept or a doctrine that's slightly revealed in the letters to the churches about Nicolaitanism. Generally not understood by anyone. And it's all about freedom and about liberty. Right here, Second Catholic, and every man is a Catholic, by law. Every man is a Catholic. So what boils down to Nicolaitanism. That is that permeates all of civilization, is the very basis of civilization. That word is a transliteration of a Greek word, Nicolaitan. Two words put together, destroy the people. It was in the religious realm, it's the distinction between clergy and laity, and it's in everything. It's in government, it's in business, it's in commerce, it's in. And that's the thing, that attitude that says that you gotta pay your dues, the mystery of it, fuller. You gotta pay your dues, you have to brainwash your belief of this, and then after you pay your dues with a teacher, with a degree or whatever, then you're better than those under you. You're better than them, and then because you're better than them, you can make their decision, and they have to delegate that authority, their responsibility, and their authority to the leaders.
Yeah.
That's what's wrong with the world. That's
enough
job what's wrong with the world.
Well, I go a little bit farther than that. I don't think that's what's wrong with the world, but I could be wrong. What I think is wrong with the world is man is flawed. Man is flawed. You see, when I finally recognized that in myself and in others, I determined I don't ever want to be a king. Because if I'm a king, I may get the power that will tempt me to be despotic to my fellow man, and I don't ever want to be that. See, I learned something in my life. You can talk about the devil and Satan all you want to, or any kind of aspect of this evil entity, Typhon, Seth, I don't care what you call it. All you want to. But you see, I have a tendency to look at the real world. And I have a tendency to test philosophy just like I would test anything else. And if it doesn't stand up in the real world, it goes out. It goes out of my life. And what I found out in the real world is this. If you take man completely out of an area, evil ceases to dwell there. The laws of nature operate flawlessly the way God intended them to operate. If you put man into that picture, you bring evil into that picture, because evil dwells in the heart of man and nowhere else. And that's where evil must be confronted and controlled. And good people confront evil within themselves on a daily basis and come out victorious if they're lucky and if they're diligent. And even the best people are hiding some skeletons in their closet because somewhere along the line they gave in to temptation and committed some evil act, either against themselves or someone else. The best people in the world, I don't care who they are, have some of those skeletons in their closet because they're human beings. And when they stand in front of me and tell me that they don't, I know I'm talking to a liar. Same as when I meet a couple that tells me they never argue. I'm talking to two liars. Somebody tells me their children never lie. Oh, brother, that's a real big liar. And that's probably why their children don't lie. You know what I'm talking about? They taught their children to lie by lying like that. The real world The real world, if you look at it, will point you in the right direction. Always. When you get off these flights of fancy and all of this kind of namby-pamby good stuff and niddly-diddly, airy-flight philosophy crap, you're going to get lost. Stick to the real world. Test what's right and what's wrong in the real world, and you'll be pointed in the right direction. And that's the truth. How many people do you know say, I don't have to get involved in real world things? I'm going to be raptured. How many people do you know say that? What kind of people would allow evil to prevail without confronting it and battling evil when they have children or grandchildren? And they know that if they don't confront this and defeat it, their children will be subject to it. What kind of people are those people?
No will.
No, the truth is they're escapists. They're escaping from the problem and having to confront the problem and solve the problem by convincing themselves or rationalizing or subscribing to a belief that someone else teaches that says it's okay for you not to be responsible. You see, it's a human thing for people to fall into that because we spend a good 20 years of our life trying to get to a position where we can be responsible, leave home, sign contracts, get out of the real world, make our mark, and then when we find out how tough it is, most people spend the rest of their life trying to find somebody that will relieve them of their responsibility and take care of them. And that is the big attraction of socialism. That's what socialism says to you. I will take away the responsibility that you have. I will put it on my shoulders. The state will assume that responsibility. Yeah, you have to give up your rights and liberties and freedoms. You have to do what we say. But we're going to take care of you. We'll change your diaper. We'll give you a job. We'll give you an income. We'll even tell you what job you're going to have, and we'll give you that job, and we'll furnish you with recreation and all kinds of stuff, and we'll take care of your medical bills. And a lot of people find that very attractive because it says, I don't have to be an adult anymore. I don't have to be responsible. I don't have to look at the problems or solve them. All I have to do is go along to get along. Right? You know, I went and talked to my father, who'd been an Air Force officer all his life, retired as a colonel. He was a pilot. And I was reared on Air Force bases all over the world. I looked up to my dad. I thought, my dad is defending freedom. He's defending the Constitution. He's fighting for the underprivileged of the world. My dad is a big hero. Then he retired. And I went to recruit my dad to help me in what I'm doing. I said, Dad, you got to help me. I mean, you bring a lot of credibility with you. When you stand up and you talk, having, you know, done what you've done and being who you are, people are going to listen to you. You could really be a great help in our crusade to keep this country on the right track. My dad said, Son, I've known about this all my life. Said, but I can't help you because I get a retirement check from the government, and if I help you, they might take this check away and saw all your money that I have. You know, it hurt me deeply, but I told my father goodbye, and I've never been back because my father betrayed me and my children. He sold out for a measly $1,500 a month. You see, freedom of my children, his grandchildren, you can't put a price on it for me. The government could come tomorrow and offer me $500 million and I'd spit in their eye before I would sell the freedom of my children and my grandchildren. So I still love my father, don't get me wrong, but I can't go talk to my father anymore because he sold my children. Cheap. Okay? And he did it because he's a human being, and human beings are weak. My father has a brain. He's one of the most intelligent men I've ever met in my life. He doesn't have to take that check. And even at his age, he could make a real good living doing anything that he decided to do because he's smart. that he decided to sell my children and me, his own children, my brother and sister, for their retirement check. And all of a sudden I realized my father was not defending the Constitution, was not defending freedom, was not standing up for the oppressed people of the world like I thought he was as a boy. He was not the hero that I saw him as. My father was sacrificing 20 years for that retirement check. That was his whole goal. And then I sat down and really looked at the military service, and it suddenly dawned on me, this is an indoctrination into socialism, that anyone who stays in the military for 20 years and gets a retirement check is a socialist. There's no doubt about it. If they weren't, how come the VFW and the American Legion and the Veterans of Foreign Wars, which is the VFW, and the AMVETS and the Vietnam Veterans Association, how come they're not all up in arms against what's going on in this country? How come they're not up in arms against what's going on in this country? They've been bought and paid for. That's why. Bought and paid for. I went to the VFW once. I was going to join. Went for several days, and I found out there's just a bunch of old guys sitting around getting drunk on beer and telling lies. How great they were when they were in service. Now, not all of them are like that, but that's generally what goes on in most VFW halls. And that's the truth. So I left, and I've never been back. And every once in a while, I would say, hey, you got to come down and join the VFW. I said, no, thanks. If I want a beer, I'll go down to Safeway and buy a six-pack and drink it home with my family. Thank you. And continue my work. And I won't tell no lies. Because by and large, from my experience of war, there aren't any heroes. War was not glorious. It was a big rush sometimes. That adrenaline can do strange things to your body and to your mind. But it was a terrible thing. And none of us ever ended up really fighting for what we thought we were fighting for anyway. And in the heat of battle, who are you really fighting for? Yourself and your buddies. And you don't think about that flag or anything else. All you think about getting yourself and your buddies out of there with an ass in one piece. And that's the truth. That is the truth. It boils down to that. It's me and these four guys against the world. But we want to make ourselves feel good, don't we? So we invent all these other things that go along with it. If we really want to be honest, what we should be saying to ourselves is we were silly and we ought to make sure this never happens to our children. And if we got to fight a war, let's fight one last war for freedom. And let's make sure that our children never have to fight another war ever again. For anything.
Good night, folks, and God bless each and every single one of you. This is the Voice of Freedom.